This episode of the podcast is sponsored by guess who? You guessed it. Our friends 13, THUR13EN.com. You got to visit their website for tons of cool t-shirts, hoodies, everything they have fits so well. I mean, look how supple I look in these shirts. Do you want to look this supple? I promise it's not the workout I just did. It is 1,000% the shirt doing the heavy lifting for me. Check out their website, grab a couple shirts, and when you check out, use the code word CORYCAST, all one word. You're going to save yourself a little bit of money. Our friends at 13 make high quality clothing for high quality human beings. Check them out, THUR13EN.com. Let them know Corey sent you.
You know, being a real estate agent is really hard. You don't have a steady paycheck. You constantly have to find new clients and new customers to serve. And it can be really exhausting because it's a grind. There's some days where you feel like you're working from sun up to sundown. So much so that the failure rate for real estate agents in their first year is 75%. It's staggering. 87% fail in their first 5 years. Wild. With a career that has such a high failure rate, it is amazing to me that you could take somebody from the West Coast and then bring them to the East Coast and they're able to run a successful business. I mean, the cards are stacked against you twice in that situation. But my guest today, Marianne Ace, has been able to do it with her eyes closed. This lady has got it all. There's a reason why they call her the Ace. Not only does she have fantastic social media marketing, but she has awesome people skills. She is a fantastic instructor and just like really genuine, which I think I appreciate the most about Marianne. But it just, it blows me away. It's like really hard for a lot of people to build their real estate business and run a successful business. That's when you're growing up in your hometown and selling real estate in your hometown. You have so many connections, right? You have so many friends. You have all these family members to call on. But when you transfer to another area, you have none of that. So you have to work twice as hard as every other agent. And Marianne has done that, building one of the top producing teams at Hunt Real Estate. Marianne showcases exactly why so many customers and clients are drawn to her. Her people skills and her way of communication and just how like articulate she is all the many reasons I think Marianne finds success in this business. In this podcast, it was really great because I got to sit down and learn a little bit more about Marianne. I mean, we've been friends for a while and I've just never really got to learn all this great stuff about her. And we talked about how she built the business, tips and tricks for new agents. But also there's a lot of great stuff in here that even if you aren't a real estate agent, I think you are gonna love this podcast. If you are watching this right now on YouTube, do me a favor, hit that subscribe button. That's right, I'm gonna beg you, hit that subscribe button, hit a like button on the video, leave a comment, let me know what your favorite part about the podcast was. All these kind of things free for you to do and it helps the podcast grow naturally. And without you, I couldn't do what I love, which is talking to really cool people that get me fired up and excited about my job and different hobbies. I'll stop with the beggar's hat because I want to get to this episode with my friend, Marianne Ace. Marianne Ace, thank you for doing this. I appreciate your time on a random Friday.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I feel like you are a very busy person, so doing this is very flattering. Thank you for taking the time. You and I met from the social media summit when you guys asked me to do that a couple of years ago. And yeah, the more we talked, the more I was blown away at how you've created your real estate business. Especially being a transplant from the other side of the United States, the other coast. What brought you to the East Coast?
So actually my husband, so Ethan's born and raised Syracuse. We lived very, very shortly in the Midwest, but we didn't have family really on either side there, which can be tough. We decided to really plant roots in Syracuse. Where his side of the investing business was already existent as well. It was crazy times. I moved here just a few months before the whole pandemic and lockdown. Yeah, it was December of 2019. So it was quite interesting. You know, I was like excited to see all the food places, meet friends here and whatnot. And I moved here in a time where that was so discouraged.
Yeah, right. New place. You're like excited to meet new people.
Yeah.
And you can't do that.
Yeah. So, but I've been investing in real estate since 2015 and was an advisor for a well-known nationwide company. And so was traveling a lot. And that was really, really cool because I love to travel, love finding new food places. And when we settled down here, obviously had the mindset to continue investing here, but I added realtor to the profile to list our own properties. And I don't want to say accidentally because, you know, we put in a lot of hard work and just put my head down and, you know, tried to really just grind out in this business and ended up having a realtor team as well. I think that passion came from teaching newer agents, obsessed with systems and creating standard operating procedures. Like in any business, you're going to need certain things and systems to make it successful. So that's what I focused on. And then other agents were asking me questions for a short period, ended up training new agents at the boutique brokerage that I was at. And it ended up being a good fit with some people. So that's how I guess the team was born. And so
do you do real estate in the West Coast? Did you say you got it when you were here?
I started real estate in the West Coast. Probably not the normal story. I can be really stubborn and hard-headed. And what I was stubborn and hard-headed about was my fear of active real estate investing. I was working 50 plus hours per week in corporate America and was really, really good at it. And really, I like putting in hard work into something and getting expected or predictable yielded results.
Yeah.
And so I was doing that.
You came into real estate where it doesn't seem that way.
No, it's so funny. You know, I can get obsessive about personal development too. And it's funny because the things that I fear, I feel like in the last at least decade, I've tried to have a fascination with it. Like I have a huge fear of heights and then went and skydived or skydove. I don't know what the past tense would be, like twice. Yeah. And actually have a few hours logged up flying in the air.
No, thank you.
Yeah. So scary, but I find it fascinating to take up hobbies for a little bit and not really master it, but go past like the intro class. Actually, you're super into jiu-jitsu. I've taken a few classes here. So I thought that was really interesting. But
I didn't know you did jiu-jitsu for a little bit.
Oh, not even like a few classes. Like I actually have been really considering going and taking more habitual classes to maybe try a competition so that I have a better understanding. Because it's like with anything, if you don't practice, you will forget it. So if I were to, this is over a year ago, I actually have a YouTube video. I went to Avon Jiu-Jitsu in Beeville.
Ben owns the school. He's a good dude.
Yeah, really amazing team, really welcoming because it can be intimidating your first time going to the mat.
Like not even, it's intimidating when you see what's going on, but also pair that with that you're a smaller person and you're also a girl, and can be intimidating when you see a bunch of 250-pound grizzled men rolling around on the mats, you know?
You know what? I really love it because it's kind of like what they say about volleyball. You can be a really great volleyball player because you can get down really low, right? So being smaller or shorter, you can really use that to your advantage.
1,000%.
I tried Aikido for a few classes too, and that whole mindset is not how muscular or heavy-weighted you can be, but how you maneuver, you know?
It's all about that technique. So,
Yeah, exactly. In the skill. And I kind of feel like, and totally correct me if I'm wrong, I guess my mindset, even in jiu-jitsu, is it's also really more your mindset. Like, how fast can you think on spot about the move and like playing the other player, if that makes sense?
When you're a smaller guy, you have different opportunities, easier to escape things, but there's certain positions that are just absolute nightmares for you as a smaller person to be in. But if you have the technique and you have the like reaction time to like quickly get out of things, it can be used to your advantage. People laugh because they tell me I have the frame of a teenage boy when I grapple with them because I'm able to get out of positions. Somebody who's a little bit larger stature cannot do. Do you know what I mean? So there are some advantages, but there's also some disadvantages, which suck.
Pros and cons to everything, for sure. I felt really comfortable in one of their women night classes. So you're paired up, and it's so awesome, the community of the feedback and the support too. I found that I can get out really easily, but once I'm stuck, I'm freaking stuck.
And you're right. Like, a lot of this stuff is, if you don't use it, you end up forgetting about it. And especially the self-defense aspect, which is nice, nice part of jiu-jitsu, kind of just helps you in a weird situation because you never know.
As a realtor going into these like vacant homes, and the safety aspect into that, good to know some of these. I got to get back.
You said you like to dabble in different hobbies. What are you into right now? What's your jam?
I'm kind of in between finding a next one to go into a series. So I've even tried Aerial Silks.
I've seen pictures of that.
Yeah, oh my gosh. So I don't really have a lot of upper body strength, but it's this concept of, you're not going to just all of a sudden get upper body strength. So when you go to the class and you are consistent, I did a series, Intro to Silks, with them. It was amazing. Highly recommend. I like getting into hobbies because there's so much in the world to learn and try, and you learn something about yourself each and every time. If Ethan watches this later, I messaged him. There's this swing dance on Tuesdays type of class. So I'm kind of looking into that or other dance classes. When I first moved here, I said it was December 2019, January 2020, before everything was crazy. I did a whole series. It was, I think, 12 weeks or about 4 months, kickboxing. I love kickboxing.
Nice.
Met friends there, you know, so.
Yeah. You got to network a little bit. And especially when you got here to New York, was your intentions on running a real estate business?
Our intentions always were real estate investing. It wasn't initial intentions to add on the realtor side or to grow that. And even when I added the realtor side at first, it was mainly to service some clients, but really listing our properties and, you know, getting to know the area more. I mean, I moved here knowing no one but my husband. I had come to Syracuse maybe twice before for work, but really didn't know much about the area. So they say when you begin as a realtor, pretty much every program out there always says, grow your sphere, work your sphere. Well, what do you do when you don't have one?
Yeah, right. And that's tough because there's a lot of agents who get in this business and don't make any money their first year. And you came from the West Coast with no connections. Yeah, West Coast, no connections. And were able to build the business. What did you do that led to the most success in that venture?
I think a lot of it, and maybe this is not the answer that anyone would expect, but it's a lot of really challenging and really maintaining your mindset. I think it can be very, very discouraging in any business. An entrepreneur in any business, there are a lot of pros and cons. There's that one meme of success in a business, expectation being the straight line, and then reality where it's
really all over the place.
Yeah. And you see these other memes of, you know, one day you feel like, oh, this is great. And it's like, oh, I'm going to quit. Oh, this really sucks. How many fires do I have to put out? So I think it was almost creating this naive mindset and not paying too much attention to others, because it could be so easy to compare, especially as a realtor, when you're seeing other realtor Instagrams and whatnot, and all the posts of like, all the success and whatnot. I think I had to have blinders on.
Something that you like practice that, or is there a technique that you learn that helps you not be so comparative to others?
Not to say that I'm never, you know, I think that's very human to compare or notice others and whatnot. But I guess technique wise, and it's funny, on my way to the office, reading this audiobook, and the chapter they're talking about is gratitude. As simple as it sounds, it was really enlightening to be reminded. I'm terrible, terrible at journaling, just horrific at it, which is odd because I like to take, for lack of a better word, a shit ton of notes for everything. So I held on to gratitude a lot during that time, but also just kept myself busy. Whatever my to-do list was that day to really move the needle, or one of my mentors back in the day said that building a business or whatever goal you're working towards is like building a castle. Each day is one brick at a time. So if I'm focusing on what that brick was that day, and was I happy or proud of the work that I put into that brick that day, while also still giving grace, that wasn't the brick that I was cool with that day, tomorrow's another day.
Yeah, you know, being kind to yourself. It's a weird job, because when you go from like 9 to 5, you have somebody giving you orders, you have some sense of direction. But when it's real estate, there's also, I feel like the voice in your head that is like doubting you is louder than ever, just because it's an inconsistent business with not a steady paycheck, you know? So there's always the fear of loss.
Blinders make sense, right? It wasn't blinders from just social media or what others could say or what I think people think of me. It was also blinders to really shut out the voices of those fears. And for really a straight year, I turned that off, if that makes sense. And I think I did that because there's going to be ups and downs. This is not the time when you're starting to pay too much attention to that. I almost did not really allow evaluation for how good or bad things were until the year was done.
Mm-hmm. Right. Interesting. Do you make like a business plan when the year is done? Do you do some planning for the year, next year?
Yeah, for both businesses, Ethan and I definitely do that. As far as the realtor side, because you don't want to be so blind that you are not able to progress and now you're in your own way, right? Yep. So being able to evaluate, this is what served me and did super well. Here's also where there are areas of improvements that now I'm just working harder, not smarter. So year one was hit the ground running, do everything possible. This is where you pay your dues as a new business owner, no matter what business it is. And then it's evaluation. Right now, where are the places I can put systems? Because in order to grow, and I truly believe in business, you're either growing or dying. There isn't really, and I think Alex Hormozi just said this. I read one of his books. I think it was 100 million offers. Really great book.
100 million offers.
I think that's the one, because he has 100 million offers and 100 million leads. Really great. I follow him and his wife, Alex and Layla Hormozi. And it was, I read that one earlier this year, like I think the first week of January, actually. And that's where he said, you're in business, you're either growing or dying. It's really a myth to maintain. Now
I'm looking up the book. Sorry, I'm not saying
you. No, you're okay. He actually is the one that does the audio for the audiobook too. So it's kind of cool.
I appreciate that. When I'm listening to an audiobook, I want to hear the author's voice read it in his own story. But there are some that when they read, and even if it's the author, they're like,
Hey, my name is Chris Smith, and I'm here to read my book, $100 million. Like, don't put me to sleep.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't put me to sleep. Give me some emotions like you were when you were typing this book.
I do like it. Audiobooks are a challenge for mine. I guess it's like my mental challenge this year. I have been so stubborn against them because I love the smell of new book. I like to read it, have it in my hands, and write notes and highlight what was my takeaway that year. I actually love to reread books and take a different colored highlighter so that I can see what were my takeaways the last time I read it and what were it then, and then kind of get to compare who I was in those times and what stood out then. So that's tough for me because audiobooks, you don't do that. And I have a hard time. I learn better writing. Even if I'm, you know, at a lecture, I need to doodle to listen and really stick. Yeah. So with audiobooks, it's been really different. I find that if I pair it up with a task, maybe it sinks in a little bit better. But this year I'm tackling that on, and like I committed myself to a membership with audiobooks.
With Audible?
Yeah, with Audible specifically. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that's the one thing I think is my downfall is I don't ever read. I just listen to podcasts. Honestly, a bulk of my business practice comes from Tom Ferry's podcast, and I just I kick myself because I don't read enough. And in December, I read what is that book by Phil Jones? Exactly What to Say for Real Estate Agent. I really like that book.
Good, simple book. Straight to the point book.
Yeah, and had a lot of good like key phrases and good things to like keep in the back of your head to kind of handle different objections and stuff. And I'm working on this other book I just started reading on Spotify. It is called The Code Conversion, or The Conversion Code, by Chris Smith. Yes. And it's all about how to convert your leads into clients and customers, which I think is very interesting. Yeah. There's just so much knowledge out there. I haven't even wrung the towel out on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I could talk books with you for days. Love them. And it's a lot of great takeaways and conversations without having the conversation. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And I love that when you read a book again, there's something else that you can take from it.
Do you have like a goal to read a book every month or week or something? Are you one of those?
I've been terrible with, so when I traveled a lot, it was, I would say, easier because then you're reading on the plane, you're reading at the airport and whatnot.
Yeah.
So I used to read at least like 30 books a year.
Whoa, that's cool.
Yeah. Silly enough. So I turned 36 in 10 days, actually. Oh my goodness.
Nice.
So I set just like a easy goal of like, well, why don't I do 36 this year? And I'm maybe looking to surpass that if I'm adding audiobooks into it.
Oh my God, 36 books?
Yeah, why not? You know,
3 books a month? Are you kidding me?
Well, if you're putting Audible in there, honestly, I don't really listen to the radio when I drive. You know, I'm listening to Audible, and you know, we're running all over the place. So whether it's errands or showing homes, and you know, so I kind of replace that time. And here's another trick too. So I'm listening to Audible while I'm, you know, every Sunday, that's when I'm doing laundry and cleaning the house and like anything to set for the week, right? That's my reset day as well. And so now I'm doing laundry, I'm listening to Audible at 1.2 speed or 1.5. Oh. So it's going by faster even still. Yeah. So yeah, 36 can be a magic number. And if I get past that, great, you know.
That's impressive, Marianne. Holy cow. I couldn't imagine. If I could only do audio books, maybe I can make it happen. But you want me to read? I'm the worst.
Yeah.
Marianne, how do you structure your day?
How do I structure the day? Oh my gosh. Yeah. I think the best way to answer that is by how I also structure the week. Like I just said, Sunday's kind of the reset day. You know, what we are on meal plans. So Saturday or Sunday is when we pick that up. And that's our defrost process. So that way we can start Monday with them. Saturdays, we tend to go to Salt Room, have weekly or the monthly business meeting for the investing. The,
Body Mind Float Center.
Yeah, I really like it there. Honestly, I've been to many others in other states, and they are by far the best offering and pricing. Mm-hmm. I went to one in Columbus, Ohio, and it was like $75 per person. Now, you are in like this made salt cave, and the aesthetic's really nice. But the benefits are the same if you're sitting in a room that just has the salt ventilators. Yeah.
Have you, do you mess with any of the float tanks in there? You
guys I haven't yet. It is a goal to, absolutely.
You definitely should. I feel like you would for sure love it. I don't think I know Ethan well enough to know if he would like it, but he's into meditation, so I feel like you guys, that would be your jam. Unless you guys are claustrophobic.
Way more consistently than I do, actually, too. And he stays on meditation more than I do, too. I actually have a hard time with meditating. I was very, very scared to go into yoga because that's another space where it can be intimidating to go into.
Yeah.
But I deal with like pretty bad anxiety, and I didn't want to ask for medication for it. So that's when I went into yoga, and I got certified and used to teach a little bit, actually. I find that it's an easier way to introduce into meditation, because then you are also pairing it with a,
activity,
pose or something else to focus on and distract from the thoughts. Yeah. Actually, during the lockdown, I spent that time getting certified for meditation, for guided meditation.
And, oh, really?
Yeah. And now I feel like it's the thing that really helped me the most. And I hope anybody listening that's ever wanted to get into meditation or yoga, I feel like the thing that made it easier was to not judge myself so much for the thoughts passing and just noticing the thought and letting it pass. You know, I think the initial intro to meditation, we think, oh my gosh, am I thinking too much? Am I doing this right? Like, am I supposed to be doing this kind of breathing? Oh, what do I have to eat? And I can go on with how fast the thoughts can go. And instead, maybe introducing the idea that you're going to have thoughts no matter what, because you're a human, you're not a robot, or, you know, so allowing to think the thoughts and just letting them pass as if it's a cloud in the sky that you're, if you've ever gone cloud watching, it's, you just let it pass. Do this last pass slowly? Yeah, sure. But allow it to pass however they do. And then noticing, are you going too far into your emotions, no matter what emotion it is? And also feel that emotion, but let it pass too. If I were to describe meditation, I'd say it's like that.
It's, I feel like it gets tougher when it's, the emotion is anger or resentment or jealousy. It's way harder to like sit in and notice that emotion, because it's so hard. Your body just wants to react by screaming or yelling or cutting somebody off.
Yeah.
Is that just something that you just have to practice?
I
can't imagine it's just like one and done and you're perfect at it.
Oh no, I'm still terrible at it, I would say, compared to many out there. I would say when the emotion is higher, which we tend to feel in anger and things like that, whatever it takes for you to exert it, because I do truly believe that the body keeps the score, right? So if we don't have any normal ways of regulating and de-stressing in our life, your body is going to internalize that. And that's how we burn out or get sick or whatever, right? And so living in California and growing up and being raised there, there is a ton of traffic, and I do not miss that. And I'm talking about the kind of traffic where a normal commute is 15 minutes, but if you're in that traffic hour, it is now going to take an hour 15 to get
there. You're
going to
make me sick, Marianne.
It can be frustrating, especially if somebody cuts you off or whatever the case may be. So it makes you feel better in the moment to exert it by cussing or yelling, and then letting it go is the key. Then do that. It's the whole like sitting in it, you know?
Yeah. Sitting in it is tough. And it's just it's a practice. It's just nothing that you do perfect the first time. I'm getting like physically sick hearing that a 15-minute commute would be an hour 15. Are you kidding me?
I'm not even exaggerating. Like, that used to commute to one of my jobs back in the day. And, you know, and that's also when I listen to like a podcast or music that makes you not want to ruin your entire day, because that's how you're beginning your day, is getting to work, right? So,
What is when you came over here, you started working in real estate, what is one of the biggest things that you learned just starting a new business in a different coast, on a different side of the United States?
There's pros and cons to everywhere, right? And so I like to really focus on what are the pros here. I will say one of the cons has been that this is the only state and the only state I will probably ever do that is an attorney closing state, only because it just takes so much more longer to close. Other states that I've done real estate in are title closing states. And so as an investor, when you're purchasing with cash, you know, you can close in 7 to 14 days as long as title's good to go and it's clear. Right. And here with cash, it's immediately already 30 to 45, really unknown because it's an on or about date, not on or before. Yeah. And so that is a huge barrier to entry for many investors, is getting used to that and how many timelines, right? I mean, here we're also an attorney closing state where each side has an attorney. There's other attorney closing states where one attorney, it's like a title company closing for all, not separate. But we have essentially three: seller, buyer, and bank attorney, if there is a bank involved and you're not having a buyer attorney represent both them and the bank, right? So it is crazy because it changes a lot. You now have to account not just closing costs, including attorney fees and whatnot, but
carrying costs.
The holding costs, right? Yep. And on top of that, I've never lived in a state where there was snow. So
I didn't even think of that.
Car and leave, you have to now account for if it's a heavier. I mean, I'm saying this even though it's a bright sunny day, which is
in the middle of February
here. But warming up the car and brushing off snow and stuff.
Hold on. I'm going to defend Syracuse here, because at least we're not in traffic for an hour and 15
I'm
minutes.
I'm not complaining. I'm really not. Because one of the my favorite things about Syracuse and moving here that I'm extremely gratitude for is no traffic. Anybody that tells me there's traffic here, I'm just like, you really, really have not lived.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
You ain't seen nothing. Love Wegmans. Love the hikes here. I've always, I don't want to say I've always liked hiking. I've kind of grown to like it. I used to train and hike in California, but every hike there is out in the burning sun, because it's like desert hikes and mountainous hikes, and not complaining about the sun either. But here, the hikes are different, gorgeous, because there's gorges and there's waterfalls and there's almost a lot of shade in the path. Yeah. So very, very gorgeous in its own different way. So no traffic, Wegmans. I don't know if I mentioned that.
Yep, Wegmans.
And you know, the scenery out here for sure. Falls too. Falls
don't hit as hard in California, do they?
Foliage. Yeah, you only really experience spring and summer there.
Yeah.
So damn,
there's a whole section of people listening to this that are like, damn, I wish I would only experience that.
I'm sure, but you know what? Coming from living there, I will say this. Holidays there are great, don't get me wrong, especially if that's what you grew up only knowing. But having a
white snowy Christmas
is so different. It's much more festive here.
Yeah.
So, again, pros and cons to everywhere. I'm not shitting on any one place at all. Because there's definitely days when it's snowing here and I'm like, I can't stand it right now. I don't want to deal with it right now, you know?
You're not shitting on any place, but Syracuse does have better Christmases because of the snow. But after Christmas, let snow can go kick rocks. I don't want to see it. I'm all set.
Yeah, hands down, better Christmas, better festive, you know, spirit around here. I mean, I haven't gone to the ice skating out here, but I grew up with, if anybody has ever gone to Hotel Del Coronado, it's known out there. It's also known to be like a haunted hotel, but they make an ice skating rink, and it's now living here. I'm like, man, this looks kind of ridiculous. Like, I would still do it, but now knowing winter here and the, you know, the holiday season here, that ice skating rink, if you ever Google it, is on a beach. So it just, it looks kind of ridiculous now.
That's hilarious.
That's hilarious. Looking back at how cold it gets here, I'm like, man, why did anybody ever wear Uggs in California? It's like, there's not enough
70. To
feel that there.
The lowest it ever gets is 65.
It does get colder in some places, but it's still just like, I don't think it's cold enough to wear Uggs per se, you know?
Yeah. Now, scaling your business over the past few years has also been a big big objective for you, right? I would imagine from no transactions to where you're at now, which is a hefty load. How have you scaled your business to kind of meet the needs of the increased volume of customers?
So I will say a lot of that is going to have to do with systems. And a more streamlined process. So when we're talking realtor side, you know, I do truly believe that a lot of the challenges and a lot of the objections for a seller or buyer can be dealt with upfront. I like to know where our work is going to be cut out, right? So
do you have like a list of questions you go into each meeting, like, to help you identify those?
Yeah, I do believe in power of questions, absolutely, and more than yes or no questions. However, I would say the mindset in a consultation, whether it's a seller or buyer, is more about not so much like the same question every time, but the same concepts every time. So if I were to break down the concepts, it is understanding time, money, motivation. And the motivation can be for a home buyer, their buying criteria, right? And then when I break down the buying criteria, it is really broken down to another colleague of mine who actually used to be a real estate investing speaker, motivational speaker, but also he's actually kind of he's a colleague of Ethan and I. He had prior military experience too, and has built businesses and investing in a couple of different states and moved with the family. But and his name's Jeremiah, really great guy. He told me when I started as a realtor, because I was afraid. I was like, how am I going to continue the investing side and not lose all the time? Because you show a lot of homes, right? If it's not guided and whatnot. And he told me, focus on 5-5-5. He called it the 5-5-5. Five needs, five wants, and five deal breakers. And now I have come to find that clients don't really have all five. So it's okay if it's 2 to 5, right? And in my consultations, I'm telling them, it's okay if we don't know all these, we'll find out along the way, but it's important to highlight what it is now. And I think that's super important, because if they send over a home that doesn't fit this 5-5-5, especially the deal breakers, then there's no point in seeing that home. And really getting on the same side with whatever the client is, seller, buyer, whatever, getting on the same side as them and not having this, you know, there's kind of this, realtors are now kind of being seen closer and closer as like car salespeople on the.
Closer and closer, Marianne, we've always been right next to car sales.
I'm just saying, you don't have to be, but yeah, you're right. And so how do we help set those boundaries and guide them without it feeling like me versus you? We are saying this to you in your best interest. Like, how many times have you worked with a client and you told them, like, this is competitive, we're going to have to escalate, and they think you're crazy, right? There's still that coming around. We've been a few years now in the seller's market, so they kind of see it, but sometimes it's a surprise and a shock to people how much escalated.
Well, the unfortunate side is my biggest gripe is the bar to entry in real estate is far too low. So anybody who can have 77 hours of free time can take a course and boom, there you go. Now you can sell real estate. But here's a reason why we're better than car salesmen. I heard this in a webinar a couple of weeks ago, and it has resonated with me. I've now forgot. We're better than car salesmen. Why? Because could you imagine if you went to a car dealership and you said, okay, Marianne, I want you to find me the best deal on a Toyota Tacoma, a 2022, and I want you to compare the prices to everything that's sold in Syracuse, every Toyota Tacoma, and can you also tell me where the value is, and can you also hook me up with a good lender? Okay, cool, sweet. And then, so it's like we do all of this work for our clients, but it's unfortunately, I think it's a few bad apples who are just very lazy with their job that unfortunately our reputation is hung on those few bad experiences.
Yeah.
But we're better than car sales. We're here to be your fiduciary. We're batting for you and we're just giving you honest advice. There is no, you want to pay $189 for this house, let me go in the back room and talk to a manager and make you wait for an hour. There is none of that shit. That is us counseling you and helping you get into a house that you really like.
Yeah.
But sometimes we have information that you aren't going to enjoy. Like we're up against houses past weekend, right? It was like 11 offers on a house. You probably had to waive home inspection to be competitive. And I know that sounds terrible to say, but that's just the grim reality. If you don't want to,
We have to face those realities so that they're not so shocked. I mean, I straight up tell clients like, hey, there are chances where we can get that or get home inspection pass fail. But if you're looking at this specific home and the agent just told me there's over 10 offers, if you don't feel comfortable doing that, we can still put in your offer. But I'm going to just tell you what the odds are. So, going into it, because I can't control that. I can't control
the term advisor. My friend Alex sells real estate in Pennsylvania. He works for a brokerage called Engel and Volksners. I hope I'm saying that right, Alex.
Yeah.
And they're a luxury broker, and all of their agents are called advisors. And I love the term advisors because when you go to like an investment or a financial advisor, you could ultimately tell this person, hey, I want you to put all my money in Dogecoin. And he might be like, that's probably not a good idea. You should probably put it maybe in this stock portfolio instead. And if you tell him you want it in Dogecoin, what is he going to do? He's going to put it in Dogecoin. He's advising you on his expertise. But if you don't want to listen to him, you don't have to listen to him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's, I also love that analogy too, because I was like, damn, we are kind of more advisors than we are salesperson.
I agree. I mean, I tell every client, even in the consult, that I'm really here to guide them. I'm going to tell them the pros and cons, but it's not going to be my home at the end of the day. I'm not coming home to move in that second bedroom. You have to be the one happy with it. So I'm going to support whatever decision that you want. However, I'm going to highlight both sides for you so that you feel it's a confident, educated decision. And not
you manage those expectations right at that first meeting?
Yep. Because if you don't, I have found when I first began, I didn't do as many sit down consults, if that makes sense. They were kind of, forgot who coined the term. It was like drive by consult. We're showing the home and we're showing the home and we have limited time for that. And in the driveway, I'm kind of getting to know what you're looking for. And then all of a sudden you're in this, habit already of they're reaching out to you to show the next home. So you're just in that over and over again. I kind of almost require, whether it's a phone or a Zoom, but we're setting aside 15 to 30 minutes to go over 555 timeline. And I do that because if I set those expectations, I'm now anchoring back to them. Mm-hmm. And part of those expectations, I do tell them, because here's the thing, I don't want to encourage burnout for any agent. Any agent listening to this, there's ways to really manage that and keep your sanity, even through a spring market. So I do tell them there's two things that I really, really ask and see are needed in order for this to be a good fit both ways. And it's patience and communication. Patience because this is a crazy market. I can't really control all the pieces. We're going to do our absolute best together. And communication because I can get to know clients really fast. I pride myself in really hearing you and welcome that. I prefer overly communicating than not, but I'm yet still not a mind reader. And when you do that, it becomes a safe space and you are now their guide, right? Not here to tell you what to do. I'm just here to tell you what it is and support what it is you decide. So when you say that, it makes it okay for them to bring you their objections and for you to tackle it together. Mm-hmm. You become, like you said, their advisor, so that if they are going to buy a car before the closing date, they feel it's okay to come to you with that and check in with you on that.
It's not okay with me. Don't buy a car before we close. I'm gonna flip this fucking desk.
I'm never saying it's okay. Well, but you know, but it, at least it doesn't, it's not, will this happen every single time perfectly? No, but I have found that it just helps, because then I'm not trying to sit here and wonder why I just showed them five homes and none of them are a go. If you're showing five homes, one of them should be one you're putting an offer on. If it's not, the problem is beforehand, meaning I agreed to show you these homes and I didn't even check that this matched that 5-5 list that you gave me. That is on me. Now I'm wasting my time, but my client's time. So I do find that consultation, setting expectations with what the market is like, you know, I do that. And then when the pre-approval comes back, I call it a strategy call, get on the phone real quick with them, 10-15 minutes. And I tell them according to what, not just their pre-approval prices, I match what is their max monthly mortgage payment and what did that loan officer tell us that price range should be, what the taxes are, and I'm looking closely at that. From there, we're deducting, depending on where the competitive areas are looking at, say it's like 15,000, right? Say they said, okay, the max we're wanting to spend in Escalade 2 is 200. We're not looking at homes that are new listings, move-in ready, listed above 175. Because now I'm just placing them in a position to constantly get their heart broken.
Broken time and time again.
Yeah.
That's tough. The market is extremely difficult, but setting those expectations, I think, in the forefront is way easier and really shows that you're a professional rather than showing the house. They say they love it. You're in the driveway. And then you go, I'll text the agent up. They have 12 offers. You're going to have to waive home inspection because now you seem like the shady, shitty agent that is just trying to get them to waive everything and overpay on the house. And it only would have taken you 5 minutes, 10 minutes of work in the forefront, you know? Marianne, absolutely. What is your favorite thing about real estate?
Oof, I would say the opportunity and what it provides. I guess I never fully answered it earlier. How I got into real estate was working.
I think we got sidetracked on Wegmans. We were talking too much.
Oh man, I can go on tangents, so that's on me. But I got into real estate. I actually began as a private money lender. If you've never heard of that, ever, you know, I'm always happy to explain what that is. But basically, you become the almost the bank for the deal. And so had investment accounts, because if you're working in corporate America for how long, you probably have a 401k that you vested into matched by your employer. And that money is just sitting there, right? Rather, you know, it's growing, but it can lose really quickly. So I decided to use investment accounts to be a private money lender and grow, get that money growing by doing nothing actively in the deal and getting double digit returns. And so once I started seeing that and I started learning more about the active side, I was like, oh my gosh, because here's the thing. I didn't want to work 50 plus hours a week for the rest of my life. I love my parents. They are my heroes, both of them, for very different reasons. My dad was active duty military. He was a Navy SEAL. And my mom was an accountant for the Navy Exchange. And they too worked crazy amount of hours, and they were very active in our lives. But there were so many times, like my dad missed how many piano recitals of mine. And it was so heartbreaking because as a kid, I didn't understand why. Why [S2] Yes. [S1] Would he just get this call and he had to go? So I knew that when it comes time to raising a family, I needed a way to make money and maybe have passive income, but still have time freedom too. So that is why I love real estate, but I didn't know how to get into it. I did start in active side rehabbing and things like that. And crazy enough and scarily enough, left the corporate job, which is scary because you kind of get told as you're growing up that you need to go to school, get really good grades, go to college, get really good grades, get a really good job and make money. But I nowhere in school are you taught how to, I even think, manage your time or build a business or even buy a house, right? So
that should be a part of the new real estate course. No longer 77 hours. It's a 2-year long course that shows you how to run business, how to treat clients, exactly, how to put showings together, what to look for. I'm telling
you. How to work smarter, not harder too, you know? And I think what really did it for me is, you know, I didn't have a hard time working 50 to 80 hours per week when you're younger and you're in your 20s. I think the life lesson that happened was I was very, very close to my grandparents, and I was actually very, because of what they did for me, I would bring groceries. I would, you know, financially do things. They didn't have health insurance. So there was a lot of, I don't want to say obligation, because I was very happy to do it and happy to be in a position to help any way I can for them. But because I was working so, so much, and I don't talk about this a lot, actually, I missed the opportunity to say goodbye to my grandma. Oh. And I think that hit me so hard, because in my head, I'm like, eventually I'm going to be able to find a way to have my time for my kids. But that was always a future goal. So when life hit me this hard, I kind of lost motivation for working in corporate America. And I'm not shitting on that either, because I probably would have done that for a very long time and still been happy, yet still searching for a way. How do I still have a way to build financial freedom and also have time freedom? And so real estate did that for me. It also brought me to meet Ethan, because in his journey, he was looking for similar ways. And he moved to San Diego for learning real estate investing. And we met literally his first weekend in San Diego. So that leap of faith that was so scary. I mean, I'm sure you can relate to this, because you do real estate full-time too. You're a realtor full-time. And even though you have your amazing role at Howard Hanna, it is still within real estate, and it is allowed different for your family, right? So there had to be a moment, maybe you're working somewhere, there had to be a moment where you had to take that chance on yourself, and it was scary as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. That moment was, because I worked in first 2.5 years, I was in real estate. I was working runnings in retail, and I just knew I wanted to make real estate full time, but I just couldn't. I feel like looking back, I probably could have quit sooner, but yeah. I worked at a company. Runnings was very sweet to me. They would let me leave for 2 hours on a lunch and go show like 3 houses. And they never wrote me up. They never gave me a hard time. And it was just a really good company to work for. But that transition is really hard.
It's scary. It's so unknown. And again, because we're never really taught how to build a business, no matter what that business is, right, you're scrambling. You're not only scrambling to make sure you're getting paid, because the tough part in being a realtor is, and I think this is where a lot of people don't truly see or know this. We don't get paid till everyone gets paid, right? So we don't get paid till closing. And in this state, because closing can take 2 months, and then you have the fees. I did this reel of like what it really costs to become a realtor. And I think the average was about $3,000, because you have Supra to pay for. You have the MLS fees, your board fees. People don't account for gas, right? And then anything for marketing, logo, business cards, signs,
paid ads.
Oh my gosh, everything, right? And so, and then if you're at a brokerage too, where you have desk fees, or you know, there's obviously places that don't have stuff like that, but those are all the things that they don't even
add up very quickly.
There's 77 hours they don't talk about.
Yeah, not at all. The 77 hours is just literally just like, here's the definition, memorize it, and you have to know how many square feet are in an acre because someone's going to quiz you.
And it's not even cared about or listened to or even needed, and on a day-to-day basis as a realtor. So Because most clients don't care about the square foot, you know?
Yeah. Which is like why I think when you get into the business, having like a mentor or someone to like work directly under, I think is way more valuable than the 77-hour course.
Absolutely. Know? If you don't have a good, and this is with even on the investing side, if you're not clear about your why, the how doesn't even really matter.
Yeah.
Because when times are tough in business and there's always ups and downs, the why is going to pull you through it. It'll pull your hard work ethic through it. That's why I believe in motivation, but motivation is also a feeling. It's your why will keep you disciplined to it.
Mm-hmm. What's your why?
Part of it, I just discussed about having that time freedom. And here's the thing, you know, I still work my ass off, you know, but I do thoroughly enjoy it. But I enjoy it because I know what it provides for the family that we'll be building together. You know, if I need to take a week off to be with family, I am not asking an employer's permission for that and waiting for approval.
Yeah.
I now, you know, building our businesses in real estate is so that way we can build it around the life that we want, the lifestyle design. And so, you know, even when Ethan and I had our wedding, yes, we had, you know, things in place so that way our, you know, clients don't lose out on opportunities and things like that, but we have the ability to do that and be able to, you know, go take a week off for wedding that we had in his grandma's backyard in Hawaii and be able to fund that, have the time for it and fully be present. I do remember that the whole time that my grandma was sick and I was working again, 50 plus hours per week, yet wasn't complaining because I was making the money. I was making solid six figures at really early 20s. And that's how I was able to provide, you know, I was single, no kids. So I was blowing all the money on my habits back then. I used to race cars. So I was blowing money.
Oh, dang. I don't know. How are you just going to drop that, Mary?
Sorry. No, that was like my whole
life. I was
life,
single. You know? I didn't have no kids and I just used to race cars.
So, I mean, I loved it, you know? So like blowing through tires, that can get expensive, you know, and eating a lot and traveling a lot. And, you know, I really, you know, family is huge to me. So part of my huge why, current and a future family, and setting that for them and setting, you know, being able to teach our kids about the business and how to grow one. So that way, whatever passionate business they build, they have foundation for being able to take traditions. I'm really excited to create traditions for our family. You know, whether it's like every summer we go on a, you know, 2-week road trip or whatever. I'm just pulling this out of thin air, but and that being something that our family looks forward to, holiday traditions and money. I see money as a vehicle. So real estate to me in this business provides for our why, no matter what it is or new ones that come up, but being able to have financial freedom as well as time freedom, because we're taught that we have to trade in our time for money and that we have to build our lives around our work lives. And I am so passionate that it should be the opposite.
The opposite, 1,000%. What is this might go in a man? What is your best piece of advice for a new agent who just got in the business?
So many things. I don't think it's a bad idea to find a mentor. What sucks is that you almost don't know what to look for in a mentor or in a brokerage.
Yeah.
So maybe it's not a bad idea to look on an Instagram and kind of seeing, do they lead their business the way that I want to? Do they do deals or are passionate in the way that I want to? Because I think what gets distracting is when you're looking at different brokerages. And by the way, I'm going to throw this out there because I feel like in the agent world, it is so focused on, oh, this is wrong and that's wrong. I don't think any brokerage is wrong. I truly don't. It's what is it that you need? And so you have to be really intentional about finding out what it is you need. That's the hard part, right? It's very distracting to see, oh, we provide this amount of training, or we provide this amount of training. What about in real training of how to actually do the day-to-day, because every technology piece or training course, they may be really great. I'm not shitting on that either, but how do you actually implement it or apply it?
Yeah, that's the tough part. And especially when you're new, like I've had a new agent tell me that when she came from the full-time world of, you know, being a W-9 employee, coming to 1099 independent contractor, she felt that this interview with the broker was like, please hire me, please bring me on board. When in reality, the script's kind of flipped, right? You are the one who's trying to pick what brokerage to work at.
Yeah. And even so, because, you know, there's a lot of ego in the agent world too.
Are you serious?
Really? There's a lot of ego. People don't see this, but there's a lot of snarkiness that goes on, right? So there's definitely I would encourage any to be intentional about how to remain on the same side with your clients and agents, and, you know, being tactful in that. And actually, if you haven't read this book, Same Side Selling, amazing book. It allows you to really see how to communicate even outside of your role, like with your partner, and, you know, as a daughter, as a friend, or whatever the case may be. It's how I think it's really on extremes. People are scared to set their boundaries, or they're on the extreme. They set their boundaries in a way that is like my way or the highway. And it's like, nobody wants to work with that. So how do you set boundaries? How do you lead? How do you say what you really need to, where it is not a you versus me? It is, I'm saying this, you can take it or leave it. I have no ill intention in saying this. So going back to your question on what I would recommend to a new agent, be very intentional about who, even if you're not trying to find a mentor, but who you're surrounding yourself with, right? Because you will find that your friends that are not in real estate, they will be a good listening ear, but they may even not know how to respond to you venting, or, you know, so, and the thing is, it's not their responsibility to. The best that they can do is listen when they can. So we can't put that responsibility on them, right? That's not fair. So really be intentional about who you want to be as your mentor, even if it's someone that you follow online, right? You just said that you're on the Tom Ferry podcast and whatnot. That is a form of mentor to you, even if it's one way. This one, if you haven't searched him up, I learned about this term from an Instagram account, videographer, media company. I think his name is Connor_Murnane, M-U-R-N-A-N-E. Really great content, but there was one reel he put out there and it really highlighted to me. He said that people that follow you, they usually follow you for months before they even possibly reach out, no matter what account you have, if it's like sales and coaching or a realtor or whatever the case may be. He said that they end up creating parasocial relationships. It's one way, but to them, it feels both ways. And I find that that's true, because clients that find me through Instagram, they usually have all told me they've been following me for a while, and my consultations with them are the absolute best, because they've gone.
I already know you.
And they've like, one, they know you, they like you, they trust you, and they've gone through and learned the value you've given in there. And so, like, I had one came with a matcha latte ready for me, and it made me realize, oh my gosh, I post too much on my store about matcha lattes.
That's hilarious.
Had 555 ready to go. They had a pre-call ready to go because they had been following for 4 months watching these, and they felt really good about being that prepared.
Wow. Like, that feels nice. I love when that happens, when it's they have done your research on you. You know, I'd say I'm very fortunate, where a lot of times we're like, if I'm going to interview for a listing, more times than not, it's just me. They're not interviewing anybody else. Same. But there was this one time, I remember they told me they were interviewing other agents, and she gave me a tour of her house, and she opened up a spare bedroom that was like a workout room. And she goes, now, when I think I open this door, I think you will like this room the most. Yes. And she opened the door, and I go, oh, you got lots of weights and stuff. She goes, well, I see you online doing all your karate and martial arts stuff, and I thought you would probably like this room the most. And I'm like, oh, so you've done your research on me. She's, oh, yeah, we've already Googled you. They are doing that. They are doing that for sure.
And I encourage it. I encourage it, because, you know, selling or buying a home is a huge deal even still. Yep. And so you don't want to just like, know, and trust the person, but Or I guess, yeah, like, know, and trust is a huge, huge thing, but it's also, you want to enjoy the process, right?
Yeah.
The entire time with them.
Yeah, enjoy. It's also just like, you're going to be tied with this person for a while, right? Like, even if it's, even if you go out the same day, 2 months, you're going to be with this person, right? So yeah. It's like, you kind of want to be comfortable with who you are, especially when they're going to be handling your biggest transaction of your life ever. That's why I'm so transparent online with everything. Makes for a warmer handshake, right?
Seriously. I mean, I had a client too. They found me, they were relocating from Texas, and they said that they really already decided on me, but what was like over the edge for them was because we are both into Marvel. So
that's all it took.
So it was cool because it was really fun putting their closing gift together. You know, it was super nerdy.
All cool Marvel stuff.
Yeah, I would say, going back to that question, because I think it's super important for any agent, be intentional about who's going to be your mentor, even if it's just online, not in person. Get really, really crystal clear about your goals down to, I mean, if you're interviewing with brokerages, and they're not talking about what your goals are and what might take to get there, it may not be the best fit. And that's okay. That's just a different style. But you want to know, for example, whenever I, you know, John and Chloe can attest to this, the agents on my team, my interview with them, I wanted, no matter what, if they were not going to be on the team or they were, didn't matter, to leave them in a better position and better clarity than before we had that interview. So before even deciding if they were going to be on the team or not, I was going down to the goals, and some of it was, I wanted to leave my full-time job, which immediately met in real estate. I need to at least meet that income so I can live.
Yeah.
And so if the income was a certain amount, we took the average number of deals and the average commission it would be, and told them down to the month and week, how many ready now buyers you're going to need, because here's, you know, cause I'm crazy about KPIs or key performance indicators. I have every deal listed since I began. And so I can tell you, you know, how long it took and why for, you know, certain things. And I use that information to improve and better the process. And now I give that to my team. And so I tell them, you know, on average, it might take this long if you are very intentional about your consultation and you've laid it out, right? So you should see about this many homes with them. If you see three or more in that weekend, you should be putting an offer if it's the right fit of homes already, right? And your conversion for offers to acceptance. And so when they tell me what their goal is, I tell them exactly what it's going to take to do that.
That's awesome. And that's framing that conversation around that is way better than like, look at all the stuff that I do.
Oh, it doesn't matter what I do. I truly believe it's success as you define it. One agent can say, I only really want to create this much. Well, then the next agent doing, you know, 10 mil a year doesn't make sense to put that same game plan for them.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Each person's slightly different. They might need a different strategy to get them there. You know,
so
Marianne, really, you're wonderful.
Why is, and then matching up, is this the brokerage or the mentorship or whatever that is the best fit both ways? I don't really believe it's one or the other. Yes, I do believe it's like, okay, we're the ones interviewing the brokers, but you know, especially when you're new, you're going to want the support. There are even still questions that I ask. I mean, I probably call Steve, our office manager here in the associate brokerage here, because I'm in Hunt in Camillus, and he manages that one in Cicero. I can't tell you how valuable it is to be able to just call and, you know, I'm thinking about this or this to advise the client. What am I maybe missing? What would you say? Having that is extremely key. I've done in the now almost 3 years. I think I'm right at 200 deals, and you learn a lot in those 200. But what I've also learned, and any new agent, like, please be okay that you're never going to know everything. You're still going to come across so many situations that are very similar to what you've done before. And so you are prepared for, but they might have that little nuance that makes it a whole different deal. And so not having somebody that you can run to, like, that's why I congratulate you, Corey, on your new position, because I'm so excited for the new agents that come to your office that get to have your insight and to tap into your brain, because that's not available everywhere, you know?
Oh, thank you.
I would say advice to new agent, be intentional about where you're going to be. That matters because many don't make it past the first year, second, or the fifth year. And if you are serious about this, your first year is extremely important. And if you by chance go into a brokerage and a few months into it, you're like, this isn't the right fit. I find that people have found that, like, you know, there's a stigma of like, oh, I don't want to be the person that changes. Here's the thing. If you don't make a change, your business will die. So who cares about how that looks? Kind of thing. Yeah. And then,
and to be honest, no one's going to remember anyways.
Yeah. Who cares? So
yeah, no one's going to remember later down the road that so-and-so jumped three times to find the perfect broker. And if they do, they probably suck. Right? Like who spends their time thinking about that? Who cares?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like, who cares? Yeah. So being very intentional about your why and your goals, and, you know, it being personal goals as well as the money. Because the last piece I'll say is it's not all about the money. Again, now thinking about, you know, money as a vehicle, why are you doing this? If you're not clear on that, then when the agent business gets tough or you run across that one deal that falls apart at freaking final walkthrough and you want
to peace out,
then yeah. So be intentional about the environment and the goals.
This has been great. You're a wealth of knowledge. This is so awesome.
This has been really fun. Thanks for having me. I was super nervous.
No need to be nervous. This is just us catching up. We haven't talked to each other since the last social media summit.
The event, yeah.
So it was long overdue, and I appreciate you sharing your wealth and knowledge to others. I think any agent, new or old, is going to get something out of this. So thanks. Yeah. I appreciate you.
Awesome. I appreciate you inviting me. I can't wait to see this come out later. Oh my gosh.
Couple weeks. We'll talk about that in just a second.
Awesome.